This is Rough Injustice, the story of the 1976 New England Patriots on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It was a long way from their humble beginnings in an upstart league 16 years earlier. But for longtime observers like the Patriot Ledger's Ron Hobson, the Patriots finally belong.
They won six games in a row at the end of the season. They were flying high. And everybody said that followed football that this was a burgeoning team that could really be a Super Bowl team.
Keep in mind now 1976 as well, you didn't have an expanded playoff structure. It was a lot tougher structurally to get into the playoffs then than it is today. You had limited slots. And to get one of those, that was pretty valuable.
For only the second time in his family's ownership of the team, Patrick Sullivan would watch the Patriots compete in the playoffs. They tied for the second-best record in the AFC with the Baltimore Colts, but lost out on the division title at home field in the first round on a tiebreaker. As a result, they'd travel to Oakland for a rematch with a team they'd manhandled back in Week 4. Raiders linebacker Phil Villapiano.
Man, they gave us, and that Sam Bam Cunningham and that Johnson and Grogan. I think Steve Grogan was one of the best quarterbacks I ever played against, and then Russ Francis and then Hasselbeck. They blew me across the field. I had no clue what was going on. That first game, they totally mangled us. It was unbelievable.
We were confident, but they had a pretty good season as well. And certainly the veterans on our team, like John Hanna, Darrell Stingley, and others, Sam Cunningham, knew that they weren't just going to get a pass, but we felt very confident we could beat them, not just because of the previous score.
Russ Francis was confident, but had a healthy respect for the Raiders. So did Steve Nelson.
They lost one game during the course of the whole season, and we'd beaten them. And we knew it was going to be a different football game since, you know, it's a playoff game to begin with, but, you know, it's at home now, and it's at their home stadium, and we're the ones who had to travel across the country to play. And so we knew it was going to be, a tough football game.
We knew we could beat them. I think the first thing I remember realizing on Saturday, we had a walk-through practice or day before the game. We may have played on Saturday. I remember we walked out on the field, and the grass was really high and wet.
Steve Grogan wasn't the only one who noticed. So did Steve Zabel.
Chuck Fairbanks should have not played the game because they let the grass grow and it was like 6 inches tall and the field was soaking wet and it hadn't rained out there in 6 months and they did it to slow us down. You know, when you beat a team 42-12 or whatever it was, it just totally dominate. The only way they can beat you is by cheating, and they sure cheated us.
So we walk out there, and we're, you know, I've got in the back of my mind, we're in the midst of a severe drought, and I walk onto a marsh, okay? And the grass is 4 inches long, you know? And I don't remember the guy's name who represented the league at the time. Al Ward. It was Al Ward. He was there, and I said, you know, this is ridiculous. I said, you know, you tell us to put a cover on our field if we have a drizzle, you know? On our artificial field, by the way. And, the NFL was afraid of challenging Al Davis on anything, so there was no comment made about it. But it was clearly designed to take our team, which was younger and faster than the vaunted downfield Raiders, you know, and slow them down.
They let it grow. It was much higher. They're notorious for that. Good running team, which the Patriots were, they'd make the grass nice and deep, and you couldn't, you know, wide receivers couldn't cut real well on it. As a matter of fact, on the flight out, there was a guy on the plane, because in those days we traveled with the team. There was a guy on the plane I didn't recognize, wore glasses, curly hair, I can picture him right now. He worked for the telephone company. When we arrived there, the practice, this guy was sent by Fairbanks to scour the entire stadium for bugs and cameras. That's how paranoid everybody was.
That was the atmosphere off the field. On the field, the Patriots were dealing with a number of injuries. Running back Sam Cunningham had hurt his shoulder in the final regular season game against the Buccaneers. Receivers Darrell Stingley and Randy Vataha, guards Sam Adams and Francis, had all played sparingly in Tampa. And Nelson was returning from the broken kneecap that had sidelined him for 4 games. But maybe the most important setback was one that very few people knew about. A potentially catastrophic injury to cornerback Mike Haynes.
I was injured in that game. The day before the game, I was playing catch with Coach Fairbanks' son. His son threw a ball a little high, and I jumped up to catch it, and something popped in my calf. And I didn't know what it was. Well, I did something, and pulled a muscle in my calf, and my leg overnight swole up like you wouldn't believe. And I didn't really think I was going to be able to play in the game. I probably shouldn't have played, but I just felt like I had to, you know.
Oakland's vertical passing attack made Haynes a necessity for the Pats. It would be his job to shut down Raiders wide receiver Cliff Branch.
Oh, my God. I'm facing Mike Haynes, and he's a rookie playing like a veteran, you know, making All-Pro and, you know, his first year, a rookie candidate of the year like that. So he was very, very, very good. I mean, you could never get a good bean on him because he'd give you so many techniques and stuff like that. I remember the first playoff game when he didn't play tight coverage in the 48-17 loss. And then when we got to the playoff game, I had such a hell of a year. He played his closely tight coverage on me because he wasn't going to let me get a running start. Because I usually got when people play off me, I got a running start and get good clean release. And I beat people.
The guy behind me was a guy named Willie Germany, who is a veteran, and he was really awesome on special teams. But I don't know that he would have been able to run with Cliff Branch. And I didn't have a lot of confidence that he'd be able to do it. And that was one of the reasons I just tried to gut it out as long as I could. Because we played them so well the first time, and Cliff wasn't able to, you know, run up the field and get away as the way that, you know, he did, you know, most other times. Their strategy was different, and so they didn't have that in their strategy. and so I kind of got lucky. I couldn't have run with him. If he would have done that, I would have had to have come out, but they didn't do it.
So Fairbanks would have to play with the cards he was dealt, saying everyone who could walk would play in the game.
We think that Oakland is one of the best, if not the best, team in pro football. I think if we're going to win the game, we'll have to have a real outstanding performance in all phases. I don't think that we can expect any one part of our game to be able to carry us. I think you have to have a contribution from all sides. Special teams will have to play well. I think Oakland's special teams units are outstanding, particularly their coverage units, and we have had some success in returning this year. Defensively, it's a tough chore to keep them from scoring because they've got tremendous scoring capabilities. The thing that concerns me, I think, in playing against them defensively is the constant threat of the home run. We were fortunate enough in the previous game to get away without having the home run pass thrown against us. It's very difficult to rush their passer because of the strength of their offensive linemen, pass protection. Kenny's had a sensational year as far as accuracy is concerned in the passing game, so it will be quite a chore for us to be able to get them out. We got a lot of big plays in the first game. Whether or not we would do that in this game, I wouldn't expect us to do that. And if that is the case, then it becomes a much more physical type of contest. As all of you know, they're very strong, very big. Our team is big also. We're a physical football team.
You know, Chuck always said he liked our team mentality because we were the only team that he had experienced in the NFL that were not intimidated by the Raiders and actually took pride in playing the Raiders and beating the Raiders. Because the Raiders were a tough, you know, tough bunch back then. But we love playing against the Raiders because we matched up well with our speed against their slower guys, bigger, slower guys, and we always had success against the Raiders. We beat the Raiders quite a few times when I was there.
Ray Hamilton and the New England defense did their job on the Raiders' first possession, forcing a punt. The Pats took over on their own 14, driving 86 yards in 10 plays.
Hogan calling signals. It is Andy Johnson, and he drives down in. Touchdown! Andy Johnson goes in from a yard out. And with 3 minutes and 41 seconds to play, the Patriots lead 6-0.
An Errol Mann field goal tightened the margin to 7-3 at the end of the first quarter. It stayed that way until late in the first half, when Fairbanks dug a little too deep into the playbook.
Play fake gives to Francis on a tight end around. He's going to throw a pass. He throws one deep. It is intercepted by Oakland. With the ball is Tatum. Tatum upfield now. No. Skip Thomas, he gets out of bounds. Skip made the interception, danced up to the 20 and then got out of bounds on the 25. So they tried a little trickery, and I think it really backfired on them.
8 plays and 76 yards later, Oakland had the lead.
First down and 10, Stabler back, flag down, long pass, Biletnikoff and Howard, a leap in the end zone, a flag down, touchdown Raiders, Biletnikoff makes the catch.
Trailing 10-7, the Patriots started their first possession of the third quarter at their own 20. 6 minutes and 46 seconds later, they were back in front.
Rogan calls signal, Rogan goes back to pass, Grogan has time. He fires. Complete to Francis. 20, 15, 10, 5. And he did. He did the touchdown. A great pattern run by Russ Francis. Steve Grogan put it right on the money. And Russ hauled it in and carried it in for a Patriot touchdown. And they're back on top with 6:46 to go in the third quarter.
That was one of four catches for Francis on the day. That he was able to secure that many was a feat, considering the special treatment he was getting from the Raiders' defense.
When you talk about Phil Villapiano holding me on a number of plays, it was so blatant where he's got his arms wrapped around me, the ball bounces off my chest because I can't get my hands up. There was no flag thrown. I look over at Ben Dreyfus, and he just looked around, looked up at the sky like, well, you know, those things happen. Well, they're not supposed to happen.
I remember now I knew who Russ Francis was. And Russ Francis was not getting off the line of scrimmage. And George Atkinson, who, you know, he's a strong safety, he just has to cover him. He didn't want Russ Francis running down the field. And John Madden didn't want Russ Francis getting off the line of scrimmage. So what the two of us did was we kind of double-teamed Russ Francis. It was a shame. Matter of fact, I grabbed him and threw him into George. And George hits him with an elbow right in the nose. And blood was everywhere. It was unbelievable. We thought Russ was done. You know, that was probably midway through the first quarter. We said, okay, here we go. Russ is going to be okay. That f***er came back in with these cotton balls rolled up in his nose, blood everywhere. And I looked at that and I said, we're in trouble now.
They mugged Russ Francis the whole day. They were just pounding on him every time he ran a pattern.
I'm not sure that many people in New England know this, but Russ Francis is one of the greatest pusher offers that there ever was. He would shove you, turn around, and Grogan, the ball would be there in a split second. What he would do, he kept shoving me, and I kept holding him. I don't know how many flags he got, and I got probably three each before the fourth quarter. And there was a ref, his name was Tony Battiri, and he came in, he was the side judge, and he goes, guys, look, you're on your own. I'm not calling another flag on you guys. Because every f***ing play, I had to hold him, because if not, he'd spin around and Grogan would get on the ball, but he would shove me off if I didn't grab him.
The Pats would get the ball again after an Oakland 3-and-out. It took them 10 plays to increase their lead.
Grogan calling signals. Right side is Jess Phillips driving down and in. Jess in for touchdown. Jess Phillips off right tackle, found a hole, knifed it through for a score. And the Patriots are out in front, 20-10.
New England led by 11, with just over 16 minutes to go. But the Raiders took the kickoff and mounted their longest drive of the day. 70 yards and 11 plays in just over 11 minutes. And suddenly, it was a game again.
Power formation to the left. Garrett in the backfield with Van Egan. On the snap, handoff to Van Egan. He drives over. Touchdown, Raiders! Going into the end zone off that strong left side of the Raiders.
Now it's 21-17. After a bad Ray Guy punt, the Pats took over at the Oakland 48 with 6.5 minutes left and a chance to put the game out of reach. Penalty flags were flying all over the Oakland Coliseum that day, but it's one that didn't appear on a 3rd and 5 from the Raiders 32 that Pat Sullivan won't forget.
I remember Russ Francis had his nose broken by Phil Villapiano, and it was just this blatant slash across his nose, you know, with his arm. And Villapiano wore these pads on his arm, you know, so it's like there was a referee standing right there, you know, and Russ's nose exploded. There was blood everywhere, and it was just a mess, you know.
The ball went to Francis, and it came right to him, and I slapped his arms because he shoved me. I don't know if you ever could get the film on this. He shoves me. I took a step, came back, and hit his arm. And the ball passed off his chest, and he went crazy. He got the nose. It was all bent out of shape. There's blood coming all over the place. And the ball hits him in the chest. He could hardly even scream and yell because there was so much blood going on.
So the Patriots had to settle for a long John Smith field goal attempt.
All right, it'll be a field goal try from 50 yards. He has not tried one from that far this year. His longest was 49. He made it. His next longest was 48. He missed. The punter, Patrick, is the holder. It's the right hash mark. Here we go. Snap. Spot. Kick. It will be short, I believe. It is short. Oh, Toledo. He was down the middle, but just a bit short. And the Raiders get the football with 4:12 to go on the 32-yard line.
A 4-point lead, 68 yards to defend. And just over 4 minutes to kill. If there was one quarterback you didn't want to face in that situation, it was the guy wearing number 12 in silver and black.
Stabler, I think one of the things about Stabler that you could say is that he wasn't the most artful quarterback. He wasn't a pure passer, but he was probably among the top two or three guys in the history of the game that if you were down and you needed a quarterback, you'd want him to be in there.
You know, you saw so many games he'd come from behind. I mean, Snake would never stop. He'd figure out a way. They love playing with a guy like that.
He was the guy. Great competitor. You knew he wasn't going to make a bad decision. You knew he wasn't, you know, no matter how much pressure you put on him, that he was going to, you know, be affected by pressure or choke in any situation. He's just a real franchise quarterback who played great. And, you know, again, we knew we had to play, you know, close to perfect to beat him.
Nelson and the Patriots were a lot of things on that final drive. Perfect was not one of them.
Slot right, split back, Stabler back, needs a big completion, throws one, Biletnikoff makes the catch. He is rolled down on a hard tackle by Howard on an up-and-in pattern. Stopped at the 39-and-a-half. It'll be third down to about 2-and-a-half now. Slot left. Stabler back, looks. He throws. Branch makes the catch. Branch first down at the 48-yard line. Branch came out of the slot, made a move to the inside, and turned out, forcing Haynes to pick him up. But it was too late.
Good way to describe him. He was Mr. Clutch. And he was always calm, no matter what, you know. You know, like if you sacked him, he, you know, he kind of like shrugged it off. If he threw an interception, kind of shrugged it off. If he threw a touchdown, I mean, he was just calm, you know, cool, calm, and collective all the time. And so no matter what the situation was, the pressure, he knew what he was doing back there.
Back to pass Stabler. They picked up the blitz. He throws to Biletnikoff. He makes the catch. First down as Howard drops him on the 40-yard line. On a comeback. Biletnikoff having an incredible day. His ninth catch of the afternoon. Stabler back to pass on first down. He looks. He throws. He's got Kessler. Makes the catch on the 28. Up the right sideline. He is finally hit and stopped by Howard at the 19. Didn't get out of bounds. Clock running. 1:48 to go. First and 10, Oakland.
But here the Oakland drive stalled. Mel Lunsford sacked Stabler on first down for a loss of 8. And a pass to Dave Kasper on second fell incomplete. Third and 18 with 57 seconds left at the New England 27. Pat's nose tackle, Ray Hamilton.
Richard Bishop and I were the two tackles of that, and we decided to run what we call a tackle-tackle game, a tackle twist. Richard was the first guy going and crushed the pocket, and I was the second guy coming around.
Third down and 18, 19 for Oakland at the Patriots 28. Stabler is back to pass. Here comes the rush again. He gets it away, and the ball is incomplete at the 5-yard line. A penalty marker is down.
As I was getting close to the quarterback, I said, well, I got a chance to. He's going to throw the ball, so I may have to block this. And then it kind of held a little bit. So, I can get a sack here. So I just finished the rush and closed on him and hit him.
Raymond, you know, kept him on his inside shoulder, came up, ball, you know, stares about to throw the ball. Raymond puts his hands up, and all of a sudden, you know, the ball's thrown, so everyone reacts to the ball, and we're all happy. And all of a sudden, you look back, there's a flag on it, and go, what's this about?
A penalty marker is down. I don't know if the Patriots are going to be called for roughing the passer or what, as they swarmed in on Stabler, but a flag is down.
I thought it was a holding call on them. Well, I thought it was, but it wasn't.
And Ray Hamilton is throwing his arms in the air, roughing the passer. First down, Oakland, with 52 seconds left.
I called roughing the quarterback. The rule is the quarterback, when that ball leaves his hand, they're supposed to stay off of him. That's it. They can't hit him in the hand or stuff like that.
Ben Dreith was a 16-year veteran AFL and NFL official. He made the call on Hamilton's hit.
I got more roughing the quarterbacks than any official in the league. I protect the quarterback. That's what the referee is supposed to do.
I think, you know, I talked to a lot of defensive linemen. I had some defensive linemen friends in the league at that. Joe Green's a good friend of mine, being still a good friend of mine now. You know, a lot of people, they've hit quarterbacks like that, and I hit quarterbacks like that thousands of times. No, well, not thousands, but you know what I mean, though. Many times during the course of a game, during the course of a season, over the years like that, many times, and no flag was ever thrown.
Well, I was up in the press box, you know, and we were sitting there and we're watching. And when you're in the press box, you have the advantage of the replays. And I mean, everybody that saw the play thought it was a phantom call. I mean, and it was in such a key situation. It was like, you know, how does this actually happen? It was I don't think Ray really even touched him. I think his arm brushed by his face, you know. But I think it was such a, like, where did that come from call?
I was almost thinking that there would be a call like that during the game, you know. It's in Oakland. Come on. There's going to be a call like that. I didn't know when it was going to come or where it was going to come, but it did come.
Mike Haynes, a native Californian, was not immune to the impending doom that comes as a birthright to all New Englanders. But now it was up to him and his teammates to try to keep the Raiders out of the end zone.
It is third and a yard to go for Oakland at the Patriot 4. The give comes to Banaszak, and he drives over the middle and is stopped. I don't know if he made the first down or not. The officials stop the clock with 37 seconds left.
He has to get to the three-yard line.
Yeah. Banaszak was stopped. They're going to have a measurement. A flag is down. Hold it.
The penalty marker
went down.
Patriots, somebody has lost their cool.
Personal foul against the Patriots. First and goal to go.
That's not fair, Gil. This is too critical a situation to allow something like that to happen.
When they get down close to the goal line, and I had to bring the change in the measure, and one of the Boston guys pushed that guy, and I threw him out of the ball game and moved the ball up from the three-yard line to the yard and a half.
You just cannot call a penalty like that in a situation like this. You just can't. It has to be something that is very, very bad, or something that is very, very obvious. Naturally, their tempers are flaring a little bit. This is too tough a spot to make a call like that.
Pat's cornerback, Prentice McCray, had been called for the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, giving Oakland a first and goal from the one with 30 seconds left. Pete Banaszak was stopped cold for no gain on first down. The clock continued to tick.
It is second and goal to go for Oakland. We have 22 seconds left to go in the game. Second down, goal to go for the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders come out of the huddle. Banaszak and Davis in the backfield. 14 seconds left. Stabler rolling to his left. It's going to go down and in. A flag is down. A penalty flag is down. We got a holding call of some sort. A penalty flag is down. Hold everything. A penalty marker is down on the field. Stabler went in with 10 seconds to go. A penalty flag is down. We'll have to wait for the call. We don't know what it is. A penalty marker is down. It is offside Patriots. The Raiders have scored, and they've gone ahead with 10 seconds to go, 24-21.
You know, losing the game to Oakland was really bitter. You know, really bitter. It was. I can't explain it. I just you put everything into something, and to have it decided by someone who's not wearing a helmet, you know, really just kind of sucks. So it was tough.
Certainly the Patriots have a great deal to be proud of, the way they play today, and we'll talk more about that after Gino recaps the scoring in today's game. And my man, it is a tough one to take.
It really is, because had the Patriots been beaten and you accepted the fact that they were here and served their apprenticeship, you might say, in playoff football, and that you have to do this maybe to get the feeling of what playoff football is, you would accept it and say that's the way it was. But the Patriots really outplayed Oakland.
Of course, I was much younger then, and I was much more temperamental. I was just livid. I couldn't believe that this great Patriots team had come all the way from New England to Oakland, California, to outplay the Raiders from the get-go of that game, and then lose on a phantom roughing the passer call. It was just mind-boggling.
Coming up, more of Rough and Justice, the story of the 1976 New England Patriots on 98.5, The Sports Hub.